This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
For Saturday, August 9th, 2014, Richard Pollock sitting in the host chair for Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We got a great show for you today. Patrick Williams of NHL.com, who covers the Winnipeg Jets, he'll be joining us shortly. Later on this hour, Aaron Port signed to the Columbus Dispatch to talk about Ryan Johansson, his contract negotiations with the Columbus Blue Jackets, the trade for Scott Hartnell earlier in the summer, and the signing of Brandon Dubinsky, among other things, in Columbus. And in the last hour, Chris Peters of CBSSports.com will be on the show to talk about the hiring of Tyler Dello in Edmonton this week and a bunch of other things in the National Hockey League. Guys, it's, you know, I want to bring you in here right away because we're going to have Patrick on off the top, hopefully, if we can get a hold of him. And Patrick wrote on NHL.com the 30 and 30 feature on NHL.com, which is 30 teams in 30 days talking about the offseason. And, you know, we've obviously talked about the Jets at length on this show, but, you know, Patrick basically does a summary of the offseason. And the headline, which I know sometimes, actually most times, if not all the times, he doesn't write, you know, talks about Jets looking for an end to a playoff drought and kind of the same team it was last year. Is there any other way to put it?
No, this is it's a carbon copy with a few new pieces and a few lost pieces, but essentially it's you got the same team.
Same look, new year is exactly the title.
Yeah, and that's, you know, essentially what you got with this Jets team so far.
Yeah, I think so, Dave. You know, you look at, you know, Patrick's done a great job here. I think he released, what was it, 5 articles on NHL.com, and we put it up on a Legal Curve, and, you know, he does a nice job, and it really is a situation for the Winnipeg Jets this year where really if the core of this team isn't able to take them into the playoffs, which is going to be tough. We know it's going to be tough in this division for the Winnipeg Jets to make the playoffs. You're going to have to look at that group and then reevaluate where you're going, because with the exception of a few signings, Matthew Perreault obviously being the biggest one, there's not a lot different. So you have to look within, and there's a lot to be excited about, and starting with the youth of Trouba and Scheifele, but really it's going to start with, you're talking about the other players in that core group, the younger players. To me, it's Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian. We'll be talking about that for 2 months, but to me, those are the two key players that they have to take the next step, and we've been waiting probably for a couple years now for that to happen.
He has 5 questions, Patrick does, on NHL.com, and I'll read you the 5 questions, and we'll probably ask him about a few of these. But I want to know your opinion, guys, on which one you think is the most important of these 5 questions. First question Patrick poses is, can Coach Paul Maurice impose his values on the Jets? The second question he asks, what will happen with versatile forward Michael Frolik? The third one, can the Jets avoid letdown games? Fourth question, can the Jets improve against the Central Division? And the fifth question, can Andre Pavlik break his way out of the bottom echelon of NHL goaltenders? Of those 5 questions, Dave and Ezzy, which one do you think is the most important?
I personally think there's no question it's the Pavlik one. I think if Pavlik can do what he says he can do, then he could potentially help the Jets you know, this year. But if he plays like he did last year, the year before, then the Jets are in trouble.
Dave, it's tough to argue with that, because the Jets goaltending was the obvious weak spot of the team last year, and the defense had issues and injuries really made a player like Mark Stewart play more minutes than I think Paul Maurice wanted him to play. And he did a great job, by the way. But I think that Andre Pavlik wasn't good enough. And you saw a year where he had no excuses, really. There weren't major injuries, and there wasn't anyone that was really pushing him. It wasn't a situation like in Vancouver where you could blame the fact that you weren't getting enough starts. Mm-hmm. But for me, ultimately, at the end of the day, guys, this team's trying to make the playoffs. And so to me, it's, can you be better in your own division? And I think all of these questions that Patrick have asked are good questions, but I think to me it's that. And I have serious doubts. And it's not because the team, it's not a well-constructed team. I think it's just because of how good the division has got, and the fact that the Jets right now are, there's still so many question marks based on what happened last year. And so to me, And that's at every position. I mean, we know what we're going to expect. From the top line, we know, you know, what you're going to get from Blake Wheeler. You know, you're going to get from Brian Little. But have they done enough in the bottom six? And have they done enough in their top 4D? To me, no. And I would have liked to see, again, a little more internal competition for some of those spots. And yeah,
isn't that trouble? Let me get in there for a second. Isn't that troublesome, Ezzy, in the sense that that's kind of been the same question every year, right? Because that really has been the issue. I mean, you and I, you know, you, Drew, me, Dave, everybody's been on this show has talked about the fact that that lack of depth has been a concern, and the top four pieces in terms of defense have been a concern, and they go, we go into this season, and you know, we're August 9th right now. Training camp's about just over a month away. You know, crazy to think that. Just over a month away. And as the title says, you know, new, same old team kind of thing. How do you expect anything different? Are you doing the same things and expecting a different result? And I realize internal growth will happen. And don't get me wrong, I do think it will happen. But will it happen to a level that's necessary to take the team to the next level? And I just don't see it.
Right. And you have, sure, you have this... even dating back to the Atlanta Thrashers days, you have a lot of first-round picks playing in the NHL currently, and that includes Winnipeg Jets draft picks. You have Scheifele and Trouba already playing in the NHL, and maybe perhaps there isn't enough youth coming through the system. And I think this year you are going to see the possibility for a player like Carl Klingberg or a player like Patrice Cormier, Eric O'Dell, to get that third-line left-wing spot. I don't think that there's any real...
The problem I have with that is you know, Devin Sedigucci plays there for a bit last year,
yep.
And you're putting right wingers on left wing, you're putting centers on left wing, right shots on left, you're putting square pegs in round holes kind of thing.
In the sense that
they just don't fit there. They're not natural left wingers. I realize it's easier to convert from a center to a winger as opposed to a winger to a center. Having said that, you can't keep putting natural players in different positions. Players who are used to playing right wing and center and left wing. You just can't do that. I mean, how do you expect guys to succeed that way? That's the problem. That's why I think bringing in Gagliardi is a good thing. TJ Gagliardi signed last week by the Jets in free agency to a two-way contract. You know, he's a fourth-line winger. I think it tops. But at least he's a winger who can play that side and create some competition. The problem is your top two wingers, Andrew Ladd and Vander Kane, there's no problem there. I mean, on ice play. You could talk about whether or not there's going to be trades or not. And then the second two guys on the left side, unless I'm wrong here, are Eric Tangrady and TJ Gagliardi. Arguably both fifth-line players.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that that's even more reason why you could probably see a player who played for the Ice Caps last year get into the lineup. But, I mean, it's going to come down to winning more games in your division and seeing improvements from players where you're talking about Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian, two players that were each given long-term contracts. They've got to be better. That, to me, that's the key to this team. The key to this team getting into the playoffs, that is. Sure, and everybody know, and we're going to talk about this a lot over the course of the next couple months. I mean, there has to be improvements in goal. The defense has to be better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Patrick writes about Paul Maurice and buying into that.
I was going to ask you about that.
I mean, they don't have an option. I mean, they have to buy in. If you don't buy in, I think we saw last year that you just won't play. So, I mean, and I think that he has the respect of the room, and I think we saw that when Paul Maurice came to Winnipeg and replaced Claude Noel, the results were immediate. And sure, you know, the team, I guess, you know, struggled a little bit after they went on the initial winning streak, but we saw that he put his stamp on the team. Now he's going to be able to put his stamp on the team from training camp, not just coming in mid-season. But I don't think that'll be a problem. And
let me ask you though, I think it's an interesting question. I don't know the answer to it, but I'd like to hear your opinion on this, and Dave, I want to get your opinion as well on this. You know, Paul Maurice comes into town. Are players more apt to listen when a guy's, you know, there without the security of a long-term deal? Or are they now more apt to listen now that he has a long-term deal? Because remember, he didn't actually sign the contract until the end, after the season was over. So do you think the players were motivated to hear what he had to say before he was locked in, and now it's like any other coach, or it's the same as it was before?
I think it's a really good question. And I think that you'd probably look at players that are either on one-year contracts or on the last couple of years of a contract, it's a little bit different as opposed to maybe someone who has the security of a longer-term contract. But I think that absolutely, when players saw how poorly the Claude Noel era ended, and we heard about that, you know, Claude Noel, a guy, you know, coming into the dressing room, he just lost his dream job type of thing. That was his first NHL head coaching gig. And I think you saw players react because of how bad things were with the five-game losing streak in the middle of the season and how they were losing. But I think that Paul Maurice is going to come in this year, and it is a fresh start. And I think it was a fresh start mid-season, but I think that...
Can you have two fresh starts then? Now, yes, that's kind of the question.
Yeah, and I think it's a good question, Richie, and I think that, you know, you probably can't in the sense that it's the mindset of this team has to be different, though. I think that this team is going to have to find different ways to win. I think everyone knows how hard it's going to be for the Jets to win in this division, and I think they're going to have to change the attitude of this team. Changed last year, I think, midway through the season with that little streak that they went on when Paul Maurice took over. But I think that, you know, this team really is, if they're not going to the team hasn't changed significantly. I think we saw that. And I think that for this team to be better, they're going to have to look in the mirror and find ways to win hockey games.
Which concerned me if I'm a fan. Dave, you're in the room a lot during the course of the season. You're obviously in the room before Claude Noel was let go and after Claude Noel was let go and Paul Maurice was brought in. Did you see any noticeable change in the dynamics of the room pre-Claude Noel and post-Claude Noel?
You know, that's it's hard to say. Not really, but I think that it's because a room... I mean, it may have been a little looser because... slightly looser because I think that was kind of hanging... The specter of the firing was kind of hanging over Noel for a while. There's speculation. I think that impacts how the team kind of operates a little bit. So that was probably a little bit of a negative. I think when Maurice came in, it was kind of a breath of fresh air. So that might have impacted the room slightly. But from the player's perspective, I didn't really get a sense of it. I mean, you know, they said... The platitudes were a little bit more rosy, but I mean, realistically, I think they knew that they were in tough. And I'm not sure whether, you know, him having a long-term contract now, whether the message will be lost or not. I mean, it's an interesting question. I think he's a good motivator, so we'll see. And he's going to have to be because, like, realistically, based looking at this team and looking at the division they're in, Paul Maurice is going to need to get every inch out of every single one of these players.
Yeah, I think it's going to be important. I know the Jets, you know, They don't play a ton of games at home at the beginning of the season, but I think it's important for him to get them early because you don't want to lose the team early. And I don't think that's as important for a coach who's been around a long time with a team. I think with this team, you want to be able to build some confidence in... Maurice wants to build confidence in himself, and I think the team needs to build confidence as well. And I think that's, you know, obviously those two aren't mutually exclusive. And if they start off struggling, do they start in bad habits again? And does he have to work them out of that as opposed to focus on something else? I want to leave it there, Ezzy. I want to come back. We're going to have Patrick Williams on to talk about his article after the break. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. And this segment's brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Legal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're now joined by Patrick Williams of NHL.com. He covers the Winnipeg Jets for NHL.com. Patrick, thanks for joining us this morning. How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
We're doing really well, Patrick, and you've wrote a bunch of articles for NHL.com this morning. You know, the 30 in 30 feature focuses on the Winnipeg Jets, and you had a bunch of questions, Patrick, and we posed them, you know, to each other, actually, in the first segment. And I asked Dave and Ezzy, you know, which question of the five that you listed did you think was most important? And they talked about the fact that probably Andre Pavlik and his performance may be the most important question for the Jets next year. Is that your opinion as well, or do you think something else is maybe a bigger factor for the Jets coming into the 2014-15 season?
Well, first, I should say that I was limited to five questions. I probably could have come up with 20 questions. pretty easily. Secondly, Pavlik is the biggest question. I also think Pavlik is probably the clearest answer of all those questions because I don't see him somehow his age changing his stripes too much. I think he is what he is as a goaltender. He's going into his sixth NHL season now, and his numbers haven't changed all that much over that time. So I think we know what we have with Andrei Pavlik. So as he goes, so goes the Jets. But if I was a Jets fan, I'm not sure I would take much comfort in that.
Patrick, I think you'd agree that the Jets are going to be in tough to make the playoffs this year just because of the simple fact that they're in the best division in the NHL, and I think you're not going to find too many people at the station or in hockey in general that don't think that the Jets are going to be in tough to make the playoffs. What are the chances of the Jets making the playoffs? What has to happen for this team to have a legitimate shot to make the playoffs?
Well, I think for one, I think you'll need one of those, probably the top five teams, which is every team in the division except Nashville and the Jets. One of those teams would need to really fall off what they're expected to do. So maybe Colorado, maybe they hit a slump this year, maybe Minnesota if they can't get their goaltending situation resolved. So for one, that would be the first step. I think they would need someone to fall off the pace there to clear a spot. And then secondly, you would need Pavlik to play well above the level he's played at for most of his career, frankly. And then third, I think you need everybody to have really strong years. You can't afford to have an Andrew Ladd or a Brian Little have their performance fall off. That's one thing that's kind of masked a lot of the Jets' issues the last couple years. You've gotten really strong performances from Andrew Ladd, from Blake Wheeler, Brian Little. All those guys have stayed healthy. There haven't been a lot of injuries with their top six. And then I think you need the rookies like Scheifele and Trouba. You need them to continue to develop and to not have any sort of setbacks in that second year that you sometimes see with young players.
Patrick, who do you see playing third line left wing?
I sort of debated that. I think it's going to be a committee, which we've seen a lot in the last few years on that third line. If I had to pick, I would probably go with Eric O'Dell, but check back with me tomorrow because I might have a different answer. I would probably go O'Dell for now, but yeah, I think that's going to be a spot that they're going to struggle to figure out.
You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Patrick Williams of NHL.com. Patrick covers the Jets for NHL.com. Patrick, we haven't really talked a lot this offseason about Dustin Byfuglien, and you know he's slated to play forwarded by from all accounts really, but we know he doesn't really want to play forward, and while he doesn't play left side D, we know the Jets do have an opening in their top four as far as I can tell at least, and we'll ask you about that in a second. Do you think there'll be any issues with Byfuglien in terms of his interest in playing forward and maybe butting heads with Paul Maurice coming into the season?
You know, that's kind of a weird issue because that was such a hot-button topic for a while, and then it kind of just faded away, and I think it faded away because so many other issues came up, Pavlik, Evander Kane, so on and so forth. I don't think there will be a major issue. I think Paul Maurice has been given a mandate. It's been made very clear that he's in charge, and he's not necessarily running a democracy like Claude Noel was. Where it could go off the tracks a little bit, though, would be if the team really does fall off early on, if they get off to a slow start, and then all the frustrations and all the issues that maybe have been bubbling under the surface now start to come up, and everybody starts to sort of, maybe I don't want to say look out for themselves, but everybody's starts thinking about their own situation and where they're at, and anytime there's losing, that breeds frustration. So I think that could be the main catalyst for that.
Patrick, do you think, I think every NHL coach, new coach who comes in, talks about the condition of the team, and Paul Maurice is really no exception to that. Do you think that this team was not in great shape when he took over? I'm talking physically, was not in great condition when he took over?
I think so. I had a little stat in one of my pieces that they had, I think it was six losses in the third period where they had been going into the period, you know, holding the lead, which was eighth or ninth most in the league. So, I mean, it's not necessarily a direct correlation, but it does make you wonder. I mean, and this is probably the best way to really figure it out. I mean, we don't have access to their, you know, physical medical records or anything like that. But for him to, he had a pretty soft touch with the team. He didn't really levy a lot of criticism last year, but that was the one thing that he continually returned to. So if he's saying so, and he's not one to really bring the hammer down on them too much, I would have to think that they did. When a coach says that to me speaks volumes about the makeup of the team, though, and that's probably a whole other can of worms for the Jets.
Patrick, we were asking you about third line left wing, and I imagine we're going to be talking about this, like you said, tomorrow and for the weeks leading up to the season and during the season and probably after the season. Also, second D pairing left side, you know, we were talking about Mark Stewart and doing an admirable job there, and I think, you know, ideally they'd probably like to get someone else to play more minutes and get Mark Stewart to play less minutes. I know your colleague Corey Massasak had Mark Stewart, you know, he did his projected lineups for NHL.com previewing the Jets, and I know he had Mark Stewart there, and you know, there's a possibility you might see Grant Clitsam there, but what do you think it's going to be a combination of players, or how do you see that playing out on the second D pairing there?
I would think it will be Stewart to start. We don't know a whole lot about where Clitsam really stands right now. What he had was, by all accounts, fairly major surgery. And, I mean, that was probably 6 months ago now, and we really haven't heard a lot. Shevoldayoff made a brief comment earlier, I think in July, but how that all plays out with Clitsam will probably be a big factor. I think we'll start with Stewart, and we'll go from there. Again, I think, like, the bottom six, I think you're going to see that yeah, and probably four through eight defensemen probably be defensemen by committee. And I think the thing with Stewart, he takes a lot of criticism, but I'm not sure you can criticize a player who you know, he stepped up, you know, to fill a spot that, you know, he probably isn't ideally suited for. And I think he hung in there. He didn't play great, but, you know, he's a third-pairing defenseman that you're asking him to play as a second-pairing. And I'm not sure you can really, you can't really throw criticism at him. I mean, he's doing what he can do. And I think, if anything, you have to put that on management. That's been a spot now for the Jets that they haven't filled. They didn't fill it this summer. They didn't fill it during the last season. So I think Stewart, you could see him come in for a lot of criticism this year, but I think people just need to realize that he is what he is. He's a serviceable third pairing defenseman. He's not a number four, and you know you can't criticize a player for being asked to fight above his weight.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one, Patrick.
Patrick, you know, it's crazy to be talking about the 2015 draft already because the season hasn't even begun. But, of course, there's a lot of anticipation based on the depth. Is this a year the Jets should be trading assets?
I think you want to trade assets to get some picks. I think this is the year. I think Ladd and Bufflin, those are two other situations that have been kind of flying under the radar. But a year from now, they're going to be heading into their final year, their current deals. And once you get into that lame duck season, that becomes a really dicey situation for any general manager. So I think this is the year they need to figure out what is the future with those guys. Do they want to be Winnipeg Jets beyond their current contracts? And if not, then they need to move them as soon as possible, because every day that you get closer to the end of their deals, their value goes down. And you don't want to be Well, you certainly don't want to lose them for nothing in 2 years, and you certainly don't want to be selling them at a discount at the trade deadline in 2016. So that's a situation that's going to be a big factor, I think, a year from now. And they're going to really need to get ahead of this situation. If they can't be something that they put off, like we've seen with maybe some other situations. I think that those could be complicated issues, though, because you have Bufflin playing as a forward, which obviously he's not thrilled about. You have Andrew Ladd, who at the end of last season, fairly unprompted, said that, you know, time moves quickly and been 4 years out of the playoffs and so on and so forth. He didn't seem like a player who was too thrilled about his current situation. And you can understand that. He's a player who won 2 Cups before he was 25 years old, and now he's 4 years out of the playoffs, and it's a very likely bet that he won't make the playoffs again for a 5th year. So where will that leave him, and what will his mindset be 8 years from now? I'm not sure.
A lot more questions than answers in Winnipeg Jets land. Patrick Williams of NHL.com, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Great. Thanks for having me.
When we come back, Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch to talk about Ryan Johansson, Brandon Dubinsky, Scott Hartnell, and everything else Columbus Blue Jackets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the first hour of this August 9th, Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel, who's actually at the PGA Championship this morning.
I think Drew's wearing his pink shorts.
Do you think he has a parking spot like Tiger Woods has there, like reserved for him? He pulls up. You know, it's like 13 championship trophies for corned beef eaten. And
I would love to know what he's eating. He's for sure eating most food.
I think last time he was in Kentucky, we had an over-under contest for the amount of fried chicken
he's
got
his little mitts and a thing of popcorn right now, sure.
You hear the voices of Ezra Ginsberg and David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're now joined by Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch to talk about the Columbus Blue Jackets offseason thus far. Aaron, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing very well. I wish I was in Louisville at that golf event. You know, it's interesting. I've often thought you could build a map of North America just with T, T-E-A. Because up there, when you just say T, up in Canada, it's lemon flavored, right?
That's right.
I'm from the Midwest and most of across the swath across America, tea is just tea without sugar. But in Louisville and points south of there, if you say tea, it's sweet tea, like so sweet you could put it on pancakes. Anyways, I digress.
This is interesting.
I don't know, but I kind of feel like pancakes right now.
T-map.
Aaron, Ryan Johansson, and we'll start there in Columbus. Obviously, they're having negotiations, and you've written about this at length, and you talked about it in your chat on the Dispatch website. The negotiations, you know, Columbus just doesn't want to go to 4 years because that takes them to, I believe, UFA status. There's a 2-year discussion. Where do you think this negotiation is going to end up?
Well, the big progress probably two and a half weeks ago now was the agent for Ryan Johansson, Kurt Overhart, putting forth a 2-year offer because now at least they have agreed on a term possibility. Before, it was the two sides dug in, the Blue Jackets saying 2 or 3 years max, and the players saying, no, 4 years at least. So, you know, the fact that they're both in some way agreeing to do a 2-year deal is major progress. The problem now, and there's only one problem, but it's a big one, it's the money. How much is he going to get per year? There's still a sizable difference there, and I suspect that this is going to go into September and into perhaps the early part of the month leading up into training camp. So it's the story that won't end. That's where they're at. It doesn't seem to be as contentious as it was earlier in the summer, but that could change if it continues to go on this way.
I'm going to ask you in a second your personal opinion of Ryan Johansson. He kind of reminds me of Ryan Getzlaff when I watch him a bit, obviously not at that level, but the similar style. But Aaron, in terms of the frosty relationship, or you know, maybe it doesn't exist as it once did that change at all with the new brass coming in and the relations as a team and the player become closer at all? Or is there still some frosty relationship there that is leading to the fact that they haven't signed yet and we're, you know, in early August?
Well, I just think so much about Johansson's career. There's so many so many stages that could have gone one way or the other, and so many situations that could have been handled differently. Certainly not just this group of executives, not just John Davidson, Jarmo Kekalainen, but before that, should this kid have been in the NHL his rookie year?
Right.
Worst team in hockey, totally overwhelmed. I mean, we said from the start of summer that this is going to be a really difficult contract to peg just because of the circumstances around the player, the fact that his first 2 years he didn't do much offensively. Last year he had a breakout year.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you peg this kid? I think what's different now is the leadership of this organization has said we're not going to give up all of this RFA status based on 1 year and sign this kid to a long-term contract. Yes, we think he's going to be a special, special player. He looks like that. But to your point, they want him to be Ryan Getzlaf. They want him to be a Jonathan Toews-type competitor, which does not come naturally to too many people. They want him to shade more towards Getzlaf and away from Joe Thornton, away from Jason Spezza. They're trying to build that motor within him, and they want to keep him hungry, which is why a 2-year deal, 3-year deal tops is all that they're willing to do right now.
Aaron, was it a little bit overblown? I guess we heard that the team wasn't happy that Ryan Johansson wasn't practicing in Columbus. Was that something that you felt was a little bit overblown?
I don't know that I don't think it's been blown out too much. It's been mentioned. To me, it's specific to this player. The fact that they feel like they've had to continue to push him from behind and prod him, in some cases scratch him, send him to the minors. In some cases, if you remember just a year ago this spring, being a healthy scratch in an AHL playoff game, that's unconscionable given his skill set. So there's been this tug back and forth with the player. If Brandon Dubinsky went home, nobody raises an eyebrow. If it's a kid who they feel like they've had to really push into the fight here, fair or not, the first 3 years, and then he takes off to go home, bought a new place in British Columbia, there's some unease there about what this kid's summer is going to be like. I've heard it's been a great summer for him, that he's getting bigger and stronger still, but there are trust issues there, clearly. Between the club and the player, there's an absolute appreciation of this kid's skill package, but they are hell bent on making him into a dominating, ice controlling player that they think they have to push him to be. That that's not the automatic set for him.
Aaron, what were your thoughts on the Brandon Dubinsky contract extension?
Love the term. The annual money, I sat back a little bit in the chair, because that's a big ticket. But, you know, I probably won't make this point and do it justice, but you have to understand the situation here in Columbus and what Brandon Dubinsky means to this team and to this fan base, really, what he means to the fan base. For so long, the fans here have seen teams play, and they've had lots of good players come through here, and it's never really gotten any traction because there have been too many nights, so many nights, where you could watch this team play, and you wondered, frankly, if they gave a damn. And whenever Brandon Dubinsky's on the ice or on the bench, you never have that question in your mind because he drags people into the game. He drags opponents into the game as well, but he drags his teammates into the game. He cares so much that sometimes it gets him in trouble. And they've tried to bring him down 5% from the emotional rage that this player can go on, but they don't want to take away that part that makes him special. He has brought a level of compete and professionalism and give a damn to this market that the fans here are willing to put up with the odd silly penalty. They're willing to see him play right at the top of the line because he has, more than anybody else in this organization, has fostered the sense between the team and the fans that, yes, the team cares as much as you do. And that's a big price, I think, any organization would be willing to pay.
We're joined by Aaron Portsline of a Columbus Dispatch talking about the Columbus Blue Jackets offseason.
Aaron, anybody that listens to the show knows that Scotty Hartnell is one of my all-time favorite players. And when that trade was made for the Columbus Blue Jackets, acquiring Scotty Hartnell for R.J. Umberger, I thought that was a fantastic trade. And I know that gets criticized a little bit at this point in his career because he's lost a step. But what does the acquisition of Scotty Hartnell mean for this team? Not just for where he will play and, you know, I guess his skill set, but I guess where this team thinks that they're going.
Well, he fits the definition of how they built this thing. Big guy, plays a really competitive game, is feisty, gets under people's skin. I mean, he's just more of a continuation or a furthering of what they've built here, how they won last year. To be able to flip a player that they were strongly considering buying out and trade and acquire him along with the fourth round, they gave up a fourth and Umberger to trade Umberger for a player that they think is a better player. That absolutely thrilled and shocked them. I can tell you that. I mean, they were waiting. They hadn't used a compliance buyout. They may well have used one here. And when the Flyers decided to move on Hartnell, nobody was more excited than the Blue Jackets were. He gives them a top six guy. They didn't feel like Umberger could play in the top six anymore. They feel like Hartnell is a left side upgrade for them in the top six, and they're absolutely thrilled to have him. Now, it's a five years remaining on that deal, so maybe in 4 years we'll be talking about the buyout of Scott Hartnell, but you know, this is a today business, and for right now, they're thrilled.
Aaron, you mentioned John Davidson and Jarmo Kekäläinen earlier. Obviously, both impressive guys, and coming from St. Louis, and to me, you talk about creating an identity, it seems like this team is very much kind of molded like the St. Louis Blues. Do you agree with that, and do you think they're going to continue on that course?
I agree with it, yes. I think you would be remiss to keep the praise on those two guys. They deserve plenty. But you also have to mention Scott Housen, who's now in Edmonton and takes his fair share of criticism. But he's the guy who brought Dubinsky and Anisimov and Erickson here for Rick Nash. He's the guy who traded for Sergei Bobrovsky, the guy that brought in Foligno for Mark Mathot. I mean, you know, Scott Housen's fingerprints are still all over this franchise. What these guys have done, I think it's fair to say, they have ratcheted up the expectation level. They have ratcheted up the professionalism of the front office. I don't mean that as a slam on Scott Housen, but you've replaced him with Jarmo Kekäläinen. But you've added one of the most respected men in hockey in John Davidson. The irony of this is that when John Davidson's future with the Blues became in doubt, it was Scott Housen who went to Blue Jackets ownership and said, you may consider bringing John Davidson in, guys. There's an opportunity here. And who knows, the ownership may have said, John Davidson, the guy from Real People? You know, they was, no, John Davidson, the hockey legend. Go get this guy. And it led to Scott Housen's demise, ultimately. But for the betterment of the organization, the move was done, and it's changed things here. There's no question. I think it's changed how people in Winnipeg, how people in Toronto, how people in Montreal and other points, how they view the Columbus market. It hasn't gotten a fair shake because of the losing here, but I think people look at Columbus now with John Davidson's name on the masthead, and they view it differently.
Aaron, there's a lot of talk this week about analytics. Do the Jackets have an analytics guy?
They do. They have a guy who came in as a salary cap legal expert, Josh Flynn, and he has morphed into that. He's very into it. It's not just putting a nice guy in a new spot. It's the guy that knows his business. I still think this is such an early frontier here. Teams are keeping up with the Joneses right now, but I'm intrigued to see where this is going to go. It's got a long way to go, in my opinion, but there's something there that teams are starting to latch onto.
Aaron Portsline, the Columbus Dispatch, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
That was great. When we come back, PK Subban signs his extension right after we hopped off the air last week. Our thoughts on that? how that all came to be. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mindell, David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, Ezra Ginsberg, and of course, producer Al doing a terrific job. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. If you're just joining us, you missed Patrick Williams of NHL.com to talk about the Winnipeg Jets offseason. You missed us chatting about the Winnipeg Jets offseason. Not the first time, of course. And then you missed Aaron Portsline, the Columbus Dispatch, breaking down what's going on in Columbus. Interesting Columbus.
Love where that team's headed, Richie.
Yeah, you know,
love where they're heading.
I had a chance to interview Jarmo Kekalainen last year for our NHL midweek show. And, boy, very impressive. You know, he confident, polished, friendly, and that's kind of the same way John Davidson is, really. And you think, okay, you know, look at the hands of those guys. Look at the hands that organization's in. And Aaron talks about the expectations, and I think that's a key. And the fact that they play such a big man's game. They very much play the game like the St. Louis Blues, like the Los Angeles Kings do. Always a tough out. And I think, you know, if fully healthy this year against Pittsburgh, I thought they probably would have beat Pittsburgh. But we'll leave that for now. PK Subban, guys, we're on the air last week. We have Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette. And we asked Pat, you know, how did this get to arbitration? And he says, I was on a bunch of shows this week on the radio, and I said there's a 1% chance that this contract negotiation ends up in arbitration. Of course, it ends up in arbitration. We're on the air after the arbitration takes place on Friday, and an expected ruling on Sunday. Fortuitously, I guess, because, you know, sometime we're short on content in the summer, PK Subban signs his contract right after we're off the air. The contract is the maximum amount, 8 years. The new CBA says you can't sign your own player, for any more than 8 years for $72 million, $9 million per year. The process, we're going to get into the process because it was a very odd one. At the end of the day, Ezzy, did the end result surprise you, or was it kind of what you expected?
It was absolutely what I expected. And it's funny, Richie, you know, you mentioned that we had Pat Hickey on last week, and I think they announced the signing like an hour after we got off air. And it turns out Pat Hickey was right in the sense that he thought there was a really good chance that PK Subban was going to be signed long term, and they had to go through the arbitration process almost to put another maybe.
Why did they have to go through it?
It turns out that it was really pointless and it was for naught, right? But you know, we talked about this last week, and you know how much I like PK Subban, and I thought it would have been just a terrible shame if they weren't able to sign him long term because he is a franchise defenseman. And I know, Dave, that, you know, he gets criticized a little bit for, you know, the defensive side of his game and some of his on-ice stuff. I actually think PK Subban, and I've said this before, is great for hockey. His attitude, you know, I know he does some media and he's involved in charities a lot, and he's really taken to the city of Montreal on and off the ice. But answer me this. Is there one general manager in the NHL, one general manager, who wouldn't take PK Subban on their team?
I think Jack Todd of the Montreal Gazette puts it best when he says, you know, this isn't about statistics and an arbitration and comparables. It's about the charisma you just mentioned, Desi. And Jack Todd, who's been written for the Montreal Gazette for years and years, says the charisma that Subban has and the love for him in Montreal is very nearly on par. I'm quoting him here. With Rocket Richard, John Beliveau, Guy Lafleur, and Patrick Roy. And that's royalty. Those first guys are especially royalty. Yep. Patrick Roy, you know, has kind of fell out of favor, is back in favor now. But that, obviously, his play on the ice is the biggest factor. But it's, you know, and we talked to Aaron Portsline about the last segment, guys. That, you know, Brandon Dubinsky's role on the team in the community makes him more valuable to that squad than maybe just the numbers bear out.
And, you know, Richie, we talked about it last week, too, and I guess obviously we're talking about it this week, too. But, you know, the comparisons were made, well, you know, is he better than Shea Weber? I don't think he is better than
Shea
Weber.
No, he's not.
I think Shea, you know how I feel about this. I think the two best defensemen, well, I mean, you know, we could do a list here, but, I mean, you're talking Shea Weber, Drew Doughty, Duncan Keith are 1, 2, 3 for me.
Yeah.
And then
Ryan Suter and
Ryan Suter in there, 4, 5. Throw them in there.
Daniel Chara, but he's fading a bit.
Those contracts were signed before the latest CBA, though. I think Shea Weber, if he signs a contract today, he could get $10 million.
I totally agree.
Right? So I don't think that's the issue. But PK Subban, again, is a bona fide, let's call it top five defenseman. I think after that group.
Top 10, I'd say.
He
could make top six out of the Team Canada.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, again, you're talking about
Pietrangelo better? I mean, they thought he was more trustworthy in a big situation.
How's he getting on the ice when, I mean, you're talking about the best group of defensemen in the world, right? Yeah. They won the gold, and it's tough. But
on the right side especially.
Exactly, on the right side, you're right. And but with this team, though, and how good they did getting to the conference finals last year, they don't get there without P.K. Subban, no. Just like they don't get there without Carey Price. And I think that, you know, it really is, I know, you know, it's cliche, but it really is a no-brainer to sign him to the max and give him his money because he deserves it. He is that talented, and he means that much to the city and the team.
P.K. Subban himself said the contract was about the years and the term and not about the money.
No, it wasn't about the dollar signs. It was, you know, I mean, listen, if I could do a 20-year contract with Montreal, I would, you know. I mean, I think I've been adamant throughout my career. I've been consistent in saying that Montreal's where I want to play and where I want to be. So, you know, obviously I always wanted to play here and have a long-term contract. I wanted a long-term contract probably before I deserved one, you know what I mean? I love everything about Montreal and the city. I played here for 4 years now. I've been coming to Montreal for 7 years now, and I've made a lot of great friends. I have a lot of family and friends here, people who support me and who I have great relationships with. So for me to think that I have the opportunity to be here for a long time, for sure. My focus was being here on a long-term basis from the start, yeah.
I think Winnipeg fans would just love if any significant player on the team said something similar like that, just the love that he has for the city of Montreal. David, do you believe him when he says that?
Yeah, no, I think so. I think that the only...
I do too.
I absolutely do. I think he's a pretty genuine guy, and he speaks from the heart. And I'm with Ezzy. I love his personality. I think he's great for the game. I think he adds zest. I think he's the kind of player you need. He adds, you know, he's flavor. I mean, that's the thing. Like, he actually has a personality.
I love it.
Which I don't like stifling. I mean, personally, like I said, I like the idea that these guys can actually say something. And I mean, I've interviewed him before. I think he's really personable on, you know, when you're talking to him either on or off air. And I just think, like, he's funny. Like, he was being interviewed just before he signed his contract. And he said the day before he signed, his mom was saying to him that his visa was a little high. And his expenses were a little out of control when asked if he had splurged on anything once he signed. So he's a pretty down-to-earth kid. I mean, he's 25 years old, and I like him. I think he's great.
Yeah, and, you know, I back to your question, Richie, I think that he is being 100% genuine. And, you know, you look at his personality on the ice, and he can back it up. I mean, he can back it up with his play.
Mm-hmm.
He can get the
That's
big
right.
goal.
Absolutely.
He can do it.
Absolutely.
So he's not all talk. He backs it up with his play on the ice. And, you know, I think he became a leader. I saw him become a leader on this Habs team this year. And I think he was taking less penalties. And, you know, that bodes well for the future. Because you look at the Montreal Canadiens, and we've talked about it quite a bit this summer as far as some of the moves. Josh George's, you know, I don't like that. And, you know, Parenteau, mm-hmm. and, you know, we'll see how that works out. But, you know, this team without P.K. Subban just is a completely different team. It's a worse team. You got to have him there.
Yeah, he's just that good. You have to have him there. When we go to break, I want to talk about analytics and the hiring of Tyler Dello, something I know him as MC79 on Twitter, MC79 Hockey on Twitter, and the hiring of him by the Edmonton Oilers, apparently, and some of the other hires in the National Hockey League. We're going to hear from Jim Neal, clips from Jim Neal, a bunch of other people talking about that when we come back. 1 hour down, guys. 1 hour to go. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
10 a.m. Saturday morning, August 9th, 2014. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, and David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com. In studio, Drew Mandel on holidays this week. We'll be returning for next week's show. Guys, before the break, we talked about the hiring of Tyler Dello by the Edmonton Oilers. And Tyler Dello is a writer, is a guy online who's been writing about stats for a long time, actually. And he has been hired this week, Bob McKenzie reported, I believe, of TSN on Twitter, by the Edmonton Oilers. Lots has been made about this. I find it interesting in that he's been writing about the Edmonton Oilers primarily, although he writes about the general NHL too, or wrote about the general NHL. You should know that now that he's been hired by the Edmonton Oilers, his website is down completely, so I guess they'll be controlling that information. But I find it interesting that the team he's been most critical of throughout the course of probably, you know, of his online writing career is the team that hired him. What do you guys think of that hire? And then we'll talk about it at a broader level after that.
Well, you know, obviously, you know, you mentioned, Richie, that it is the dog days of summer here. And that's perhaps why, you know, that was getting so much attention on Twitter. I was talking to Dave about this. I had to go off Twitter a little bit. It was just too much. If you follow me on Twitter, you saw that I was going off a little bit on analytics. To me, you know, the hire, I think, is positive. I mean, good for him for getting rewarded for the work he's done. He's been at this game a long time. You know, you mentioned his website. He's not going to be able to continue with that website because now he's obviously in a paid position in the NHL. But, you know, as far as him, and you know, he's definitely earned it. I mean, he's been hired on his merits, Richie, so you know, I can't take that away from him. I think that, you know, for me, I just don't think this is revolutionary at all, and I think this is a stat that statistics have always existed, and to me, I think, you know, we should just be saying, okay, good hire. But you know, we're acting as if you know a rocket scientist has been hired here, and you know, I look at it, and is he going to have a significant impact on the Oilers? Maybe. He might not have any impact.
Right.
And
it goes both ways for sure.
Like, is he just crunching numbers, or is he adding? Is he adding insight into the general? Is he really having an impact on some of the decision making that happens? And to me, if that's the case, then, you know, it's possible he gets more and more responsibility. But
that's a good question, because you don't know if they're hiring him for his insight or if they're hiring him because they think his insight will add to the talent evaluation process, or they're hiring him because they think his insight, while they don't value it a ton, might add to another team's and they want to hire him and pay him and it's his favorite team. You know, it's the team that he follows. Yeah, it's a fair question to ask. I mean, at the same time, they have restructured a little bit in terms of their organization with Bob Nicholson coming in, and you don't know who plays what role in that hire. Dave?
Bruce McCurdy of the Edmonton Journal wrote about this hiring, and he basically said that that Dallas Eakins is a big proponent of analytics. So it sounds to me like Dello will be reporting directly to Eakins.
Yeah, that was a little bit, and I read the same article by Bruce McCurdy, a little bit convoluted in terms of how that was going to work.
Right, because then it was like whether Lowe and McTavish were in favor of it, and whether, you know, that's something that they're, and it sounds like Howson might be a proponent of it, so he's in favor. It's interesting. I mean, like I said, it's adding a piece, as he says, it's adding a piece to the puzzle that you know, can help potentially get you an extra two, you know, maybe it gives you a little bit of extra information
it's
that you didn't have
previously. Jonah Carey book, the extra 2% idea.
That's right. Right. And that's just it, right? Will you be able to get something that your opponents don't have? Mm-hmm. And if so, how badly, you know, because realistically, what's the money they're paying them? Is it astronomical? Of course not.
No.
So is it really going to cost a team if they can do that?
Probably less than you think.
Absolutely. So the idea is, if you're a team and you're an NHL team and you think to yourself, can I get an extra 2% by hiring, in this example, Tyler Dello? And that 2% can translate into more wins, more revenue. Well, then it pays for itself, and it's absolutely worth it. So, I mean, like, it's worth it for a team. This isn't like an NHL team going out and signing a player to a multi-year contract that's costing you tens of millions of dollars over the course of the
you're saying the risk is low.
The risk is low. And so I think most NHL teams either already do this or are hiring people to do this. As Aaron Portzline said, it's a new frontier. They're getting, you know, more and more people subscribing to it. So it's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting too. There were reports that he'd actually worked for the Oilers on a consultant basis in the past. I know he's worked for other teams in the past before, and I think what's happening is guys who were consulted before now being hired full-time. I'm not sure if that's just a sign of the times or it's the public pressure of having to hire. Tyler Dello was actually interviewed on the TSN network earlier on this year, and here's what he had to say about the team analytic departments in the National Hockey League.
I don't think most teams, are still debating whether or not there's value in ideas like Corsi. I think most teams are on board with it now. And most teams are incorporating it some way into what they're doing. They may not have sort of an analytics guy on board, but they are sort of, you know, trying to push past it.
If people don't know, that's Tyler Dello talking about stats. And if people don't know what Corsi is, Corsi is, just to simplify it, is just shots put towards the net minus the shots put towards your own net. So the idea is shots and missed shots, you know, shots on goal and missed shots. directed towards the other team's net. The idea is, while the NHL used to keep track of how long a team had the puck earlier, actually in the 2000s, if you believe it, they stopped doing that, I believe, in 2002 or 3. And Jim Corsi, the former Buffalo Sabres goaltender, has been keeping track. Well, goaltending coach, who was actually relieved of his duties this past offseason, he was created the stat years and years ago. And it's just a matter of, you know, determining kind of who controlled the puck, and he created it for, you know, for goaltending evaluation purposes. Dello also had this to say about, you know, discovering analytical people in the game.
There's a process that kind of takes place with teams going from sort of not knowing who these people are to maybe reading them to, you know, suddenly, you know, deciding, well, maybe we'll send an email and talk to this guy. And then the final stage is that they end up hiring the guy, and he disappears from the internet.
It's interesting to me, guys. I want to ask you about this. Timeline-wise, a bunch of these teams in the National Hockey League have had guys like this on board for a long time. I know of more than a few who've been on board for a long time with National Hockey League squads in some form or another. I am kind of embarrassed for the Oilers in the sense that this is becoming such big news, probably 6, 7, 8 years after other, if not 10 or more years, after other teams have kind of investigated these things. Now, it doesn't hurt to have somebody on board to create new ideas, but boy, you're making a big deal about something that you're really far behind in, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you know, Richie, you mentioned new ideas, and to me, I look at this, and again, you know, I was getting a lot of flack on Twitter for this, and maybe this is because my dad is a retired math prof, and it's the rebel in me who's rebelling against stats and all this, but...
we'll bring the psychologist on next time. We'll talk about that.
We've been doing this show for almost 6 years now, and Corsi plays a very little impact in how I watch and analyze hockey. And I know, you know, there's a lot of really good articles that are released and, you know, that have 20 charts and showing the Corsi and all that. And if you look at the top teams in the NHL last year, I know that LA and Chicago, they were, you know, they had some of the best,
obvious stuff.
But that's, to me, that's the thing. Stuff. To me, you know, new idea. To me, are some of these guys like Tyler Dello and Sonny Mader, are they going to come up with some new ideas, some new stats that are going to, like, to me, I look at this stuff and, you know, it's nice and stuff like that. But, you know, is Drew Doughty one of the best defensemen in the league because of his Corsi rating? Or is it because of how he thinks the game, how he skates, how he uses his body, you know, stuff like that? And to me, you know, I guess I am an old school traditionalist. I guess, you know, I'm kind of looking at this and saying that it shouldn't be traditional versus, to me, it's a complementary statistic. And, you know, you could choose to use that. But to me, it's not the be all and end all. So I look at this and I say, you know, this is helpful. And yeah, when you're doing analysis, I think Tyler Dello, what he was trying to say is that no team is not using advanced stats, and you know, it's past that point. But, you know, back to the Oilers and all that, you know, maybe it would have been more beneficial if they had him around 3 or 4 years ago and they could have, you know, drafted a different player. But that brings up the whole other argument, and Mark Seidel, who we've had on the show before, said junior players, they don't track Corsi, so we don't know what Ekblad's Corsi was last year. So, I mean, the scouts aren't, you know, are still in that sense traditional, that they're watching these players, and Corsi has little impact as far as how they evaluate a player.
Jim Neal, Dallas Stars general manager, is to me one of the more forward-thinking GMs, and obviously we talked about how great of a job he's done since being hired with the Stars. This is what he had to say about analytics that the Stars use.
Lindy's got a whole bunch of statistics. You know, he did, you know, it's puck possession, it's shots, it's scoring chances, it's chances against. So there's a whole host of things that he can pull up. You know, what impresses me with Lindy is after every game, him and his staff, they sit down, they break it all down. And that's where it starts to get interesting, because, you know, he's using a computer program for this, and then he goes through it by himself and with his staff, and then they break it down. And it's always interesting to see the fluctuation in the game to as how they see it. You know, they have their consistency to it, and then how a kind of a computer kind of sees it and that. So that's where it starts to get interesting. And, you know, it is a tool. It's a new tool, I guess, that's out there. It's not, I don't think it's ever going to be the thing where we're going to say, yes, these numbers say do this and that's it. You know, I think you still have to, you know, your scouting staff's still important. Your eyeball for the game, your sense for the game is going to be important, but it is one more tool. that's out there. I think the biggest thing is going to be, until we really get a history of it, you know, it's not something you can just jump into and say, okay, we evaluated these 10 players over the last 20 games and this is what we're going to do. I think until we get a 1, 2, 3 year kind of history, then we can probably get a better feel for it.
We've had Jim Noel on NHL Midweek before, guys. And first off, what a terrific interview. Just so insightful. I mean, Kevin Cheveldayoff, Winnipeg, needs to listen to these interviews and take something from it, and that you can be honest and give us information, but not reveal something that maybe you don't want to reveal. And I think that's something that's for another day, and we've talked about it before. But back to the idea that I think he puts it so well in terms of the way you can use the statistics that he has at his disposal. And again, remember that statistics that are online and people have access to, obviously, that's the basic stuff. I mean, if you think baseball teams or anything else are using the statistics online, they might be, but they have a lot more complicated formulas and different things that they're using that are proprietary. And obviously, that's why you hire these guys, or because you want to own that information. Maybe not even because you think it's that useful, as I said earlier, but you just think if there's a slight edge, it might be a little bit useful. And if you can have other teams not have access to it, then there's a value to that. Now, Dallas Eakins, you mentioned earlier, Dave, you know, he's a guy who believes in this stuff. He was on HNL this week, and this is what he had to say about analytics. He's, of course, a coach of the Edmonton Oilers.
The different ways that you can use this, you can use it for your team. You can use it for individuals. You can use it for pairs. You can use it for lines. You can use it for matchups. There's all kinds of different ways. The key is going to be how do you do this efficiently? And is it going to work? But we're going to, jump in with 2 feet.
You can experiment.
We're already started. We're excited about it. And I'm excited to see what kind of data we're going to get here very, very quickly.
That's Dallas Eakins, Edmonton Oilers coach, talking about the statistics that they're going to have at their disposal. What's interesting to me, I think, from Dallas Eakins' perspective, is if he can get the room on board. Because I feel like he kind of rubs some of the players the wrong way, and that's interesting to me too. You can have all the information you want, but if you can't convey it in the proper manner, then it doesn't matter.
I appreciate what Dallas Eakins is saying, but like in game decisions, is he sitting there with a chart and looking at, okay, I got to get his Corsi's really like?
Well, that's interesting, is it? Because you mentioned baseball, you can do that, and you can have somebody eye
baseball,
in the sky.
As we know, baseball is completely different,
right?
Ball of wax, right? And it's complete. See, to me, and we've had this argument many times, Richie, because we both read Moneyball when it came out.
Yeah.
We were totally down with that. That made that book was revolutionary, and it makes sense. But to me, hockey is different. It's not these stats don't translate. And again, I don't want to be like a naysayer. I'm not against these. I'm just saying like Corsi gives you it, like Jim Nils is basically saying it's another tool in the tool belt. It's another tool, another stat. It's aside from just goals tell me how good of a scorer he is. He's a finisher. He's a sniper. Penalty minutes tells me this guy likes to. To me, I don't see that. I don't see how this stat really like. If you know a guy's a good possession player, you'll have him on the ice. Like Like Dallas Eakins is saying, it'll be matchups. But don't you know that already? Don't you know who your good possession players are? Who are the guys that direct shots on net? That's what I'm just.
That's kind of what I'm struggling with.
The
coach on the team should know that, anyways. I mean, that might just confirm it, but the coach on the team should know that.
I just my biggest question is, what kind of tools does Ezzy have in his tool belt?
Yeah, it's like a hot dog, a bagel, pizza,
definitely some
cigarettes,
butter.
Beer.
We knew the latter two were for sure going to be included. We're going to leave that conversation there. When we come back, we're going to talk about the signings this week. Philadelphia had some unfortunate circumstances with Kimmo Timonen. They've brought in a young defenseman we talked a lot about on the show. A couple other signings we'll talk about as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Richard Pollock filling in as host for Drew Mandel today, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, David Manouk of IllegalCurve.com. Guys, before we start, the segment's brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat it in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Ezzy, I want to talk to you about a couple of signings this week, but we should talk also about the Illegal Curve sandwich that will be reappearing at Bernstein's Deli. It's going to be a competition not so much a competition, but there's going to be a few nominees. We believe there's going to be three nominees for the sandwich. Our buddy Aaron runs Bernstein's. He's got an idea. You had actually quite an interesting idea. And we're thinking of taking a fan idea as the third sandwich before we try them all out and figure out which one ought to be the Illegal Curve sandwich.
Right, and we're going to do the on-air competition. We're going
taste
to
test.
Bring your bro AP in, and we're going to test
sandwich artist.
Sandwich artist, and we're excited because, you know, we all know that Gary took our sandwich out of the business. So, you know, Gary's been trash talking me on Twitter. So, you know, we're bringing it back, and I've already offered Gary. He can be at the unveiling of the sandwich. He can be my special VIP guest. But yeah, it's going to be awesome. It's been a long time since the IC sandwich was in business, so we're going to bring it back, and everybody's going to be able to enjoy it at Bernstein's. It's going to be great.
This week, guys, news came out that Kimmo Timonen, who had just recently signed a 1-year deal with the Philadelphia Flyers, had some blood clot issues.
Yeah, and which is scary.
Yeah, scary, and his lungs as well, his leg, I believe, and then his lungs. Very concerning, obviously. And then the Philadelphia Flyers didn't waste much time, you know, demonstrating how concerned they were when they went out and signed Michael Delzotto this week to a 1-year deal. Michael Delzotto, guys, was a guy we've talked about on the show. I mean, we know how talented he is offensively. We know that he can skate well. His defensive play leaves much to be desired. But his offensive play and his puck-moving ability and his skating ability is very good. And just I should qualify that saying the deal is for a $1.3 million contract for 1 year. And it's interesting to note that he is actually going to be a restricted free agent after this. So the Flyers retain his rights after the contract is signed, which is, I think, a benefit to them. Good signing. I mean, I think good signing because you're replacing a puck-moving defenseman who really has lost step with a puck-moving defenseman who's not as trustworthy in the defensive zone as Timonen, but is more explosive offensively. The character issues here, though, have been a concern, which is the only reason in my mind, I think everybody else's mind as well, that Delzotto was still sitting here. What do you think of this deal?
I tweeted about this quite a bit, and, you know, speaking of advanced stats, I know a lot of people were pointing out that he actually didn't have, very good Corsi percentages. But, you know, I did think that the Jets, you know, might take a look at Michael Delzotto on a 1-year contract. You know, Delzotto, Richie, you mentioned some of the off-ice problems. And, you know, he was training with Gary Roberts. And I know, you know, that wasn't going well. And I believe he has a new trainer now. And, you know, that trainer was I'll have to pull up his name. But he was on record as saying that Michael Delzotto this summer has really shown a renewed commitment to fitness and all that. And, you know, I look at Michael Delzotto, former, you know, first overall pick of the New York Rangers, and second year he had
First round pick.
And, you know, he had the 40-point season in his second year, 3 years back with the Rangers, and he struggled this past year with both the Predators and Rangers. And I know he completely fell out of favor with the Rangers during that lockout season. But you look at Michael Delzotto, you mentioned, you know, what he brings and his skill set, and, you know, the guys that skate like him and move the puck like him and have that offensive ability are rare. And, you know, you look at, you know, like,
he's 25 years old.
25 years old, and what I like about the Philadelphia Flyers signing him to that 1-year contract is obviously it's a 1-year contract, so if it doesn't work out, you know, he can go back to being an unrestricted free agent. But also,
no, RFA after this year, remember.
Oh, is it RFA?
Yeah, that's the thing. They retained his rights because he's only 25 years old.
That's interesting to go from the UFA to an RFA. You don't see
24,
that.
Excuse me. Yeah.
You don't see that very often.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. So you retain his rights, so there's very little risk here.
That's even better.
Yeah,
I like it even more. I liked it before. I like it even better now. And you look at Delzotto, and the Flyers had trouble. They were a slower team last year, and, you know, they've still got defense. I know people were hard on Braden Coburn and Luke Shen. I still think those guys are solid defensemen, but I think they need an element of speed on this team. And
totally
Andrew McDonald, he's more of a shot blocking guy and more of a defensive defenseman. And I know they gave him a lot of money, but, you know, Andrew McDonald is definitely he's a bona fide top four defenseman. I think we'd agree with that. But you know Delzotto, I think Philadelphia is a good situation for him. He's going to a team that last year, you know, lost in 7 games to the Rangers and had that awful start. But again, you give him a 1-year contract, and I was surprised that he was on the UFA market that long. And I think that even though he has had off-ice problems, I think that it's still worth trying to rehabilitate him as a player. And I think, you know, if things go well, as you mentioned, you know, there's a chance that they'll next contract they'll sign him to 2 or 3 years. So I like it.
There's a rumor that he's going to be, not a rumor, but people are talking that he may very well be paired with Luke Shen because Craig Berube, coach, likes to play offensive guy, which isn't obviously very common.
I think that would be a good pairing.
With a defensive guy. Ron Hextall, of course, is the new GM in Philadelphia. He didn't sign Andrew McDonald to that contract you spoke of, but he did sign Michael Delzato to this deal, and this is what he had to say about Michael Delzato.
He's got a lot of attributes that a lot of people look for, and we were certainly one of those teams that we've kind of looked at him right from the start there, a little surprised that he was out there on the market, and quite honestly surprised that someone didn't step up sooner. I talked to him yesterday. He seemed to understand that last year wasn't a good year for him, and he needs to bounce back, but he's played some good hockey in this game, and I think sometimes we all forget how young a kid is, and for Michael, everything came pretty easy for him, and he's living in New York City, and he's playing in the NHL, and he's making money, and I think somehow he from the outside he probably did like the rest of us did in his situation, and got a little bit distracted, and I think this summer has been a shocking experience for him, and we look forward to big things from him.
It has been a sobering process for Michael Delzato. We're going to hear from him in 1 second and clips from him. But
love that quote from Hextall, by the way.
Doesn't he really capture everything there? I mean, everybody knows that, most people know that Delzato's had some off-ice problems here and probably not treating his body as well as he can. But the points are all very true, right, David? I mean, you're talking about a new in Manhattan making big money. You're everybody's one of a lot of young guys' favorite players, young defensemen. It's you're putting up 40 points in the National Hockey League. You're playing really well in the playoffs. And what's not to like?
Hockey is a pretty small game, and it's hard to hide your dirty laundry. And I think part of that is the reason why, Hextall can say, I mean, he's obviously not saying the reality. What is the reality, which is that everybody knows that he was having off-ice issues, and that's the reason why there was hesitance. So, I mean, he has an opportunity here to rehabilitate himself and his game and potentially turn that one-year contract into something significant. But, I mean, like I said, it's not like this is something that everybody wasn't aware of. You know what I mean? Most teams know what they're looking at when they get these kind of players.
And it's funny that, Ron Hextall, who obviously we love, a former hothead, and I think
still a hothead.
He can maybe better deal with that situation, maybe better than a Glenn Sather would have dealt with Michael Delzato. And I think, I look at this, and I'm looking at this probably with the half glass full, guys. Looking at, like, on a team like the Philadelphia Flyers, it'll be easier for him to fit into this team as opposed to New York, where I think the expectations might have been a little bit different. And also that defense, it's one of the best defense corps in the league, and I think he'll fit in better in Philadelphia. And again, I think, I think he is young enough that he can change. And I don't think that, his problems are so much that he doesn't still deserve to be in the NHL.
He has a chance to prove himself, and if he wants to get that next contract, period, never mind next big money contract, he has to prove himself. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, that's, motivation factor has never been higher. Obviously, last season didn't go as well as I would have liked, and was a bit of a roller coaster ride. Kind of a domino effect from the start of the season, but that's in the past and definitely don't want to reflect on. And this has been the longest summer I've had off, not making the playoffs, and took 2 weeks off and started training right away, and never been more motivated, and really excited that Philadelphia gave me the opportunity to come in, and can't wait for the season to start, and as you said, prove a lot of people wrong and get my game back to where it's been in the past.
It's Michael Delzato talking about how he can prove his worth, next season after many people thought he may not even get a contract. People were concerned about that or just a training camp invite. David, there's some action on Twitter.
Yeah, we have one Canadian, one Beaver, one. Interesting Twitter name. Said, very sad the Jets did not sign Delzato to a one-year deal before Philly or anyone else would have had a stiff. Very sad. So obviously Jets fans were hoping that that the Jets would have an interest in him. And we don't know whether they...
Well, I mean, he fits in the left side, fits in the top four talent-wise. Does he fit in playing defensive game? Probably not, but is he an upgrade talent-wise on the guys that they have there? Yes, it's the off-the-ice issues that I know the Jets are concerned about, and clearly they weren't the only team.
Right.
I mean, there's 29, if not 30 other teams that, you know, hey, yep. The Flyers didn't, now granted the Flyers had an abundance of defensemen, but the Flyers didn't go out and sign them before Timonen was injured.
Right.
This was a reactionary signing, I think a good one, but not one without risk, although they've limited that quite a bit. When we come back, Chris Peters of CBSSports.com to talk about the analytics hires and a couple other things going on in the National Hockey League. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the second hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this Saturday morning, August 9th, you're listening to Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel with Ezra Ginsberg, David Manouk of IllegalCurve.com. Alex is doing a terrific job producing, and we're going to talk about analytics in a second, guys, and we're going to talk about Michael Delzato a little bit more, too. Chris Peters of CBS Ion, with Ion Sports. Ion, I always get this wrong.
Ion Hockey.
CBSSports.com. They've already, yep. You know, Sportsline changed their login. You know, we have our baseball pool on Sportsline, and Ezzy is a... I wouldn't say contributor to his baseball team. He's competing for the playoffs, and he randomly checks the website.
Partner.
And then he randomly checks the website and then texts me about it as if I'm supposed to actually know what's going on with his team. But we could go on about that for a long time.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Chris Peters of CBSSports.com joins us. Chris, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Doing really well, Chris. I want to ask you about a few things. We talked about Michael Delzato last segment, and you wrote about that a couple of days ago on CBSSports.com. We're going to ask you about that. And we're going to ask you a lot about the prospects, and Jack Eichel is of interest, I think, to some Winnipeg fans who have some concerns about the Jets' chances this season. First, I want to ask you about the hiring of by the New Jersey Devils of Sonny Mehta and the hiring by the Edmonton Oilers of Tyler Dello. What are your thoughts on the teams finally, maybe I'm saying finally because it's taken a while, finally hiring on these specialists in terms of the analytic field?
Yeah, well, I think it's certainly a sign of progress. I mean, you look at other sports, and I mean, it's obviously happened in baseball. It's very popular. We learned a lot more through the Moneyball book, but you look at what the NBA has done with their analytics department throughout every team. I mean, they've made some huge strides over the last probably 4 or 5 years now in that field. So it's just hockey kind of catching up. I mean, everybody says it's too fluid a game. It's too, there's too many variables that you really can't quantify. And that's partially true, but there's a lot of little things that repeat within a game, and you get the people that can kind of take that data, turn it into something that is, something that hockey players and coaches can understand, something that they can use to their advantage. So it's just progress. I mean, and really, as technology grows, we're going to continue to get more information, and you want to be on the ground level of this and maybe get that competitive advantage while you still have it, and certainly these teams are going that route, and I think it's a good sign for things to come in the NHL.
You talk, Chris, about technology, and you reference in your article, and I've read a little bit about this too, SportView, and the role it's played in the NBA. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about that and how that might affect evaluation on an ongoing basis for National Hockey League teams?
Yeah, I think I'm still learning a lot about it myself. It's still fairly new technology, but the basic gist is it uses a camera system to track pretty much every movement on a basketball court. It's used in the NBA league-wide right now. So it tracks every movement on a basketball court. You can see, how fast the player is running, the distance that he'll travel in a game. This is also very popular in soccer throughout the world as well. Shot trajectory, everything from, whether a shot was unguarded or guarded and where it came from on the floor. I think it's really interesting what that does. And they want to try and bring that to hockey and do some of the similar things that would track the puck, how many passes are completed, how many, how fast is the player skating, how much is he skating, where are the shots coming from more accurately. One of the concerns about statistics in the NHL right now is how the league is tracking them, and it's different from rink to rink, which you don't want that. You want it to be as similar as possible. And there's a bit of human error involved in that. So this kind of takes some of that away. I don't know, how much of the information that comes through these systems will be public. But there have been reports out there that the NHL is going to start testing these as early as next season and seeing what they got. There's a couple of companies that do this. Sport View is certainly the one that is most prominent right now because of their agreement with the NBA, but there are multiple companies out there. It's just a matter of seeing how will it translate to hockey, and I think that's going to require some testing and a lot of trial and error before you get data that actually works for the league.
Chris, are you surprised, back to Tyler Dello for a second, are you surprised the Oilers hired him with how critical he's been of the organization over the past, 6, 7, 8 years?
I would say I'm not surprised by it simply because I think this is, Dallas Eakins is really, I think he's that kind of coach where he's a guy that constantly wants to learn, and I think it's important for him to learn from critics and to take somebody that can look at the game completely differently than you do. Or maybe they're not that different, but at the same time, I think we saw this with the Washington Capitals hiring Brian McClellan as GM. Part of his interview, he was very critical of what the team had done in the previous regime, even though he was a part of it. So, to have that critical eye, I think it's important because whatever the Oilers have been doing hasn't been working. So they needed a different perspective, maybe one with a little less emotion tied to it. Even though, Dello is a fan, he still was able to put a very critical eye, and I think, more recently he proved with some of his video work, particularly with Edmonton Oilers faceoff plays. I mean, there is tangible evidence there of here's an area where this team can improve, and it probably covered ground that the team had not previously considered. So I think that's the important factor. You get somebody that looks at everything differently than you do and then see where you can meet in the middle and see where it works and if it can help you improve. And I think the Oilers see this as an area where they can improve, particularly the faceoff plays and everything else. So, I'm not surprised that they went after somebody that was very publicly critical of the team because I think they can improve from it.
Chris, we wanted to get away from the advanced stats for a second and talk to you a little bit about some of the only hockey that's really being played right now, and that's at the World Junior Development Camps, Canada and the U.S. Obviously, following the U.S., if you don't follow Chris, he's formerly of United States of Hockey.
Mm-hmm.
I know you were tweeting a little bit about Jack Eichel, and you're really excited about him. But first of all, Aaron Ekblad suffered the injury, and I know you were tweeting about this. You were surprised that he was there at all. What do you make of that?
Well, every case is different. I think every player is different. Why I would specifically be critical of Ekblad being there is because he was the first overall draft pick. He was on Team Canada last year at the World Juniors. He's not under contract yet, and he is likely going to play in the NHL next year. So you put all those factors together, and you think about the Florida Panthers are a team that needs to improve. They, there's a reason they had the first-round draft pick. The first overall draft pick. So, he's an important asset for the future of your team. To put him in these situations, now these games don't count, obviously, but they are very competitive. These are players competing for spots on the World Junior team. That's a chance to advance their career. So these games are highly competitive despite the fact that it's August. So you're going to see a lot of big hits, a lot of, battling and all that stuff. So why put a player in that position that's going to have such importance, and particularly a player that, if he is available, and it's likely that he won't be for Team Canada in the World Juniors this year, why would you waste that spot on a guy that you know could be there? I know it's all about team building and that stuff, but Nathan MacKinnon was there last year and did not participate in the on-ice component. So find ways to kind of mitigate some of that risk and limit that, and I don't think they did that, and that's why I've been kind of critical, because Ekblad is a hugely important part of the Panthers organization. And I was really surprised that they were not more strict about what he could do in this camp. And obviously, we see it end with an injury.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think you could say the same for even a Sam Reinhart and others. And it seems to happen every year around Christmas. Jack Eichel, I know, a lot of people haven't seen him play yet. Draft eligible in 2015. I know you've been really excited about him. Some people are even saying that he might even go first overall.
Yeah, it's possible. I think, as much as I like Eichel, I still would have McDavid ahead of him just because of the upside, the fact that McDavid's a little bit younger and has, all that he's accomplished so far. But the thing that's interesting about Eichel is, the game looks almost too easy to him right now. He had 5 points in his last game at the camp without really looking like he was trying too hard. He's got some chemistry with the line mates that he has there. He's a big body. He's strong. He's going to get stronger. He's going to Boston University next year, where you expect him to build some muscle mass and be stronger on the puck. just thinks the game at such a high level at this point, and he's a guy that I think, you know, if he doesn't go, he'll probably go within the top two picks. And I mean, it's very early, assuming he stays healthy and everything goes as planned. I still think he's going to have a chance. He's probably one of the best American forward prospects in, you know, the last several years. There haven't been as many Americans going in the top 10 over the last couple of years. So, you know, he's going to kind of break that trend as well. But just a very interesting talent. I think a kid that has a lot of potential. And just as I said, the game right now is coming very easily to him. So we'll see how he translates to college hockey. He actually had to advance his schooling because so that he could go to Boston University next year. Otherwise, he would have still been a senior in high school this year and had to play another year at junior. So it's very good to see that he's going to be challenged against men at that level. He's going to be one of the youngest players in college hockey next year. And if he produces, I think that's a really good indication of where he's going to be able to go in the NHL and maybe be there as early as not next season, but the season after his draft. So he's a very interesting prospect for sure.
Chris Peters of CBSSports.com, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Jack Eichel, guys, Connor McDavid, those two guys, dynamic. Jack Eichel in the World Juniors last year was tremendous for an underage guy. Connor McDavid, I don't think, has had as much of an opportunity, but he was impressive at times. It's going to be interesting to see what they both do in the tournament this year because you have both guys being draft eligible. You know, obviously not being drafted by NHL teams yet, you know they're going to be there, and it's going to be a best on best in Toronto and Montreal this year, right? So it's the hype is going to be amazing, and TSN will have everything. Have you everything about that tournament and have you covered front to back. When we come back, final segment of the show, we didn't actually talk about the Brandon Sutter extension. We haven't talked about Teemu Selänne's alleged $10 million offer to play for Jokerit in the Finnish, or in the KHL, formerly, of course, the Finnish Elite League. There's that to talk about, more on Aaron Ekblad's concussion, and some troubles for the Dallas's new owner. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment on this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Richard Pollock in the host chair for Drew Mandel, David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, and Ezra Ginsberg in studio. David wants the mic.
You know, I don't think I'm too demanding when I come in. You guys ask me to you know, just come in for you guys as a replacement. I get called from the bullpen, come show up on a Saturday or a Wednesday.
My account of the events is quite different. When I opened the door and you were on your knees begging to come on this morning outside of my door, I was like, well, how am I get rid of this guy?
Dave M. Doesn't have to beg. Every time Drew goes out of town, we're more than happy to get a fresh, handsome voice show.
Can you have a handsome voice? I guess you...
I guess not really.
What I meant to say is Dave's handsome.
It was a nice adjective. I appreciate it. Anyways, the point I'm making is that whenever I come on the show...
Yes.
And I listen to, I'm listening to the coming back from commercial. It's always Richard, Ezra, and Drew. Well, Drew's not here.
That's
so
true.
I think the least that you guys could do when I'm here is Richard, Ezra, and Dave. Yeah. Or if Richard isn't here and it's Drew.
We'll have to speak to the higher-ups.
I mean, that's...
I'll leave Al in charge of that.
Yeah. Alex is going to have to see if he can get something done.
NHL news and notes.
Hey, just to cut you off, before you go into the NHL news and notes, Adam Kimmelman of NHL, we've had him on the show before. He just tweeted out, USA Hockey was supposed to play the Czech Republic at 1 o'clock. The game's been postponed to 5:30 because the Czech team hasn't left Montreal yet.
These tournaments are always great. You know, these tournaments are just terrific. Pittsburgh Penguins signed Brandon Sutter to a two-year contract extension this week, guys. He's going to be a UFA at the end of the 2 years. 3.3 per year, 6.6 total, two-year deal. Your thoughts?
You know, I was a little bit surprised, Richie, that they didn't give him more years. But, you know, Brandon Sutter still is a huge part of this team. And, you know, going forward, and the Penguins have obviously made a big, significant move, significant deletions on defense. Brooks Orpik, obviously, and Matt Niskanen, and then bringing in Erhoff on the one-year contract. But, you know, Brandon Sutter still, up the middle, they're still a very similar team. And to me, you know, I think this contract says, well, if he's not going to be who we think he is, and I think Brandon Sutter, you know, really, let's be honest, I think we're still looking at him filling the shoes of Jordan Staal, and he'll always be linked to Jordan Staal, and I don't think he's as good as Jordan Staal. No. And I think Brandon Sutter, you know, really, you know, you look at the team that won the Stanley Cup and this team now, and he doesn't give them that same strength at third line center. He's not as strong as a third line center, for example, Jarrett Stoll is on the LA Kings. Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot needs to happen in order for Brandon Sutter to become the player I think everybody expects him to be. Or, you know, because of his lineage, Brent Sutter's kid.
Remember, who signed him this time is the same guy who traded him last time.
Yeah.
Jim Rutherford traded him from Carolina for Jordan Stoll, now is in Pittsburgh and signed
him. Interesting.
I want to move to the next issue. David, of course, the fisherman of the group. I wonder what he has to wants to say about this. Tom Gagliardi, I always mispronounce him. Gagliardi, excuse me.
Silent G in there?
I don't know what it is. Was found guilty in Kamloops Provincial Court on Thursday. He's the owner of the Dallas Stars, of course. Of two counts of harmful alteration of fish habitat. He's doing some renos on his house out there, his cottage out there, and he violated some rules, Dave. What are your thoughts on that?
I say throw the book at him. it's called
throw the salmon at him.
Yeah, it's called Tom's Shack, apparently, and you know, I mean, a lot of times these guys they don't really subscribe to the laws, and I'm sure he knew what he was doing because. Apparently, during the trial, they said he told his employees to throw the computer in the lake. So I think he knew.
And was told numerous times to get off of his cell phone.
Yes, yeah. So I think he probably knew that he was in the wrong. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure he'll have to pay a fine.
Dave, how are the pickerel biting this year?
Well, I don't want to toot my own horn, but I did catch a master angler.
Really?
Yeah, second time in 10 years.
You got to take me out. I've actually never fished before.
We have a hook that you'll bite into right away.
Like I've catfished before, but I've never actually like gone out. That's not true. When I was younger, I went a couple times with family. But
Aaron Ekblad, we talked about it with Chris Peters last segment of CBSSports.com.
Yep.
About you know whether or not he should be playing this week for Team Canada, and if the Florida Panthers should have held him out, apparently had to deal with a concussion this week. Do you guys think he should have been playing? If you're the Florida Panthers, if you're Dale Towne, would you have let him play?
No. I think we know that there's a really good chance, Richie, and Chris Peters touched on this, and I think you know you guys would agree that Aaron Ekblad could be very well you know starting in the top six for the Florida Panthers.
Oh, it's expected, I think.
It's expected. And so why is he there? He's not going to be in the World Junior Tournament in Montreal and Toronto. So is he there just out of almost a favor to Hockey Canada? But it turns out he has a concussion. And guys, we know you don't screw around with concussions. So, I mean, this isn't good, and, you know, it's not, you know, they've said that it's not severe, but it's still an injury that probably didn't need to happen. So, I think they're definitely not happy about it, and they're going to monitor it, but, you know, you have to hope that it's not going to impact his rookie season at all.
David Tamaslani was offered $10 million, apparently, by Jokerit of the KHL. That's his hometown team, the team he played with before he came to Winnipeg in 92-93, I believe it was. Do you think that he'll come back for another year for $10 million?
You know, it's funny. There's also speculation that he'll take $5 million and he'll only play home games. So I mean, it's you know
from Anaheim.
No.
Or from Jokerit.
Yeah, from Jokerit. Okay. Yeah. No,
Anaheim.
Yeah, no.
Well,
Ezzy, you want to go fishing now or you want to finish the show?
But no. So I mean, I could see him doing it. I mean, it would be a nice way to conclude his career. You know, I mean, he started with them and then he would end with them. So, I mean, and he'd be able to play in front of his hometown fans and his family. So, I mean, look, I would never say never. I mean, it's a lot of money. And if you're a team of Solani, why wouldn't you? Because I would imagine that he could use those KHL dollars.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I agree with Dave. If his NHL career is over, they're going to be retiring his jersey against Winnipeg in January. You know, why not? I mean, if they're offering that type of money, why not play one more year?
Before we go to Cheers and Jeers, the segment's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. For over 25 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And Jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezra Ginsberg, you're up first.
This is an easy one. You guys are going to give me a hard time because it's a former Devil, but I'm going to cheer Brian Rafalski. Obviously, he played for the Devils and the Detroit Red Wings. He was inducted into the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. Great defenseman for many years on both the Devils and Red Wings. There were also others that were inducted into the U.S. Hall of Fame as well. And so I'll give my cheer to Brian Rafalski.
David.
I'm going to go to give my jeer to the Edmonton Oilers because 26 years ago today, Wayne Gretzky was traded to the LA Kings.
If only they had Tyler Dello working then.
That might have helped them. But yeah, no, it's I can't believe 26 years have elapsed since Wayne Gretzky was traded. I mean, that's just goes to show you how fast time goes.
Kings ransom.
You're dating yourself.
I am dating myself.
Tough. What do you do on it? Like when you date yourself, where do you take yourself?
Usually I go to Earl's Main. That's my usual hangout spot.
You gonna get a free sandwich now after that mention or what?
Oh, I never even thought about it.
We only want to focus on the Illegal Curve sandwich here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Maybe they'll have it at Earl's too.
I'm gonna give a cheer this week to the NHL. They announced the second Stadium Series game, LA and San Jose, playing at the new Niners football stadium, Levi's Stadium. I'm giving the cheer because it's only the second game they've announced for next year, and I'm hoping they're going to stop there. The first one is the New Year's Eve or New Year's Day game, excuse me, Washington Capitals, Chicago Blackhawks, which is a weird matchup. I mean, is Ovechkin still relevant? Why are those two teams playing? That's a weird matchup. But this game at Levi's Stadium between the Kings and the Sharks, you know they hate each other. I believe NHL.com noted that no teams have played each other more over the past few seasons than these two teams. Great comeback last year for the Kings, and the NHL's limiting how many outdoor games they're playing, which is terrific.
There's no need to have six or eight or whatever they had last year.
Can't believe we already got through the 2 hours. I thought August 9th was supposed to be a quiet show. You know, August, I mean, it's never quiet with Ezzy here, but.
time flies.
Well, it is quiet, but, you know, we're not that far away. I mean, you know, you'll blink.
Jets Young Stars exactly. Tournament is right around the corner.
When is that?
Middle of September, September 12th, I think.
September 12th.
Yeah. I think they play the Flames Young Stars the 12th. Yeah. I have it on the site, illegalcurve.com.
Nice plug. All right. So I want to thank our guest today, Patrick Williams of NHL.com. Came on to talk about the Winnipeg Jets. I want to thank Chris Peters of CBSSports.com. Ion Hockey, I'll get it right this time. Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch, formerly the Columbus Post-Dispatch, and I'm trying to figure out when they made that change, and I'll look into that. Maybe our reliable source, Wikipedia, can give us more information on that. And the fact that Ezzy now has internet is something that he's obviously very thankful for.
Thanks to Chris Walby for that, by the way.
Chris
the big
Walby,
man.
Yeah. Yep. He set up a few blocks for you, and you went right through and got a couple burritos. Thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. Thanks to David Manouk for filling in for, I guess, me, technically, be filling in for me. Thanks to Al for producing. Thanks to Ezzy, of course. Drew will be back next week. We'll see you next week at 9 a.m. sharp. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.